April 4th, 1968 happened. Dr. King was assassinated. We were so hurt, we cried, and we were angry.
My mom says I was dancing in my crib with MTV in the background. I was singing as soon as I could speak. But I very soon gave up school musicals in order to learn how to play guitar.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
I'm Jessica Henkin.
And this week on the podcast, Badass Bitches, two stories about women who take on the man and look awesome doing it. But before we get started, we want to thank Park School of Baltimore, a longtime Stoop podcast sponsor. They're an independent co-ed K through 12 school in North Baltimore.
Yes. And we also just want to acknowledge that we are doing this COVID style. So we definitely are sounding a little tinny as far as our intros. We acknowledge that. But the stories today come from a show that we did right before the world turned upside down. So the audio quality for them will be superior to this. So our first storyteller is an amazing woman. Her name is Mrs. Antoinette Faye St. Clair. She's from the south side of Chicago. Just coming up in a week, will be celebrating her 20th class reunion from Hopkins Carey Business School. And then her 50th high school class reunion is coming up in June. So take a listen to Antoinette.
In 1968, I was 15 years old, the fourth child of nine children, living with our mom and dad on the south side of Chicago. One day, I was talking to my best friend, Dawn, about a newspaper article that she had read. This newspaper article said that the schools in Chicago were segregated and there were inequalities in these schools in our neighborhood. Dawn looked at me and said, "Jones Commercial is one of these schools." "Let's go to Jones Commercial." I looked at Dawn. I said, "You want to go to Jones?" I had never heard of Jones Commercial. And she said, "Yes." I said, "I don't know if I want to go, Dawn. I was a 15-year-old teenager at Wendell Phillips High School, having fun, going to the volleyball and basketball games, the football games. I was nerdy. I was having so much fun. And another thing, it was a co-ed school. It was only 20 minutes from our home. I liked boys. I was getting into that. And it was just fun. I loved school." And I said, maybe. Then she said, "Well, Jones Commercial is an all-girls public high school. They're accepting minority students' applications to integrate and also to reach their racial quota." I was like, "Oh, okay. Let's shelve that right now." So time went by, and it's still 1968. April 4th, 1968 happened. Dr. King was assassinated. We were so hurt, we cried, and we were angry. At that time, that's when I decided I would go to Jones Commercial and I would integrate that school. I submitted my application, and I was accepted. But to my surprise, Dawn and a lot of my other friends had applied also. And they were accepted. So we were all going to Jones Commercial. At 15, we finished our sophomore year at our respective high schools. And then we transferred into Jones Commercial. This was the most traumatic experience of my life. It transformed me, and it changed me. We were all going to Jones that next year, 1969. The first day of school, I was scared. I was nervous, just like I'm nervous now. Can I take this off? Yeah. I can really get to it. I was scared. Wait a minute. I was scared and I was nervous, but my mother, she was the rock. She said, I have known Tara all of my life. I lived in Mississippi. Then she said, 4 years of high school, 4 years of college, and then you are ready to live. And then she told me to put my best foot forward. And I always listened to my mama, because if I didn't, I knew what would happen. So I put my best foot forward. I went on to Jones Commercial, an all-girls public high school. It was a new, brand new building, 6 stories, located in the downtown area of Chicago's South Loop. Now, people don't know where Chicago's South Loop is, and I didn't know either. It was really Skid Row. We had to step over hobos to get into the school. But the principal of the school told us not to walk on the side of the same street where this new homeless shelter building that housed men was. He told us to go on the opposite side of the street and then come directly across and come right into Jones Commercial, into the front gated area. And that's what we did. For 2 years, I rode 3 buses and a train to get to Jones Commercial. I had to leave home by 7 a.m. to be there by 8:30 a.m. Classes started at 9 a.m. and we had a full day of classes from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. The principal ran the school like it was a business. It was a company, and he was teaching us how to be working ladies. But when I rode those buses, it felt good, because freedom, I've always told my daughter, freedom is getting up on that bus and riding it, sitting wherever you want it to be, and nobody telling you to move. So I rode that bus, and I rode it proudly. I was only 15 years old, 16. But we all, not only me, Dawn, and all of my friends, we rode those buses, because they never told us that we would be bused. They never even told us how we would integrate the school. Our first year, in our junior year, all of our junior and senior classes we took in our junior year, that first year, it was very intense. I had no social life. Now, I'm from Wendell Phillips. I liked having fun. I had to give up my entire social life that first year because I refused to fail out of Jones Commercial because the teachers were very hard. We had to turn in our classroom assignments on time and homework assignments. And if we didn't, it was a zero. Like I said, they ran it just like a business. It was zero, no exceptions, no excuses. And I turned in my homework assignments on time. During my second year, because it was an all-girls public high school for juniors and seniors, in my senior year, it was much lighter. I was so happy because we had that strict dress code that I had to change to. It was business suits, dresses, nylons, 2-inch stack heels, pillbox hats, and white gloves. Not one day, but every day of the school year. But once I got into Jones Commercial, and once I went into that building, it was filled with opportunities. We had a mandatory work study program where whatever major we was majoring in, I was a shorthand typist major, we worked around the school. I went to school in the morning, and in the afternoon, I worked 1 p.m. to 5 p.m. I was making my own money. I felt good. I was able to pay for my own senior expenses. I was able to help my mom with my family. And I was being better in my community because I wasn't hanging out on the streets. I wasn't doing all of that. And also, our senior class, we could see the light at the end of the tunnel. It was so bright. We took over Jones Commercial. All of our friends. We started planning our mother-daughter's tea. We planned our senior prom. After the fall dances, it was time for graduation. On June 18th, 1971, I proudly walked across that stage and I accepted my high school diploma because I had earned it. Jones Commercial had transformed me from a 15-year-old, 16-year-old, 17-year-old teenager to a young working lady. I was making my own money. When given the opportunities, I realized, and I know today, Black teens will excel. They can exceed. We just want the opportunities. And Jones Commercial gave us that opportunity. We broke down barriers. We took risk because I was walking across that street with those hobos, and we called it Hobo Jungle too. I was walking across that street. We took that risk and we dispelled every negative belief that Black teens in Chicago could not excel and would not succeed. I am a living witness to that. On June 18, 1971, as I said, I graduated from Jones Commercial. Next year, June 18, 2021, I will celebrate my 50th class reunion. I'm looking forward to seeing all my friends, my good friend and my best friend, Dawn. She died in 2012. I won't see her, but I'll see everyone else. Thank you for listening to me.
We said that with her name alone, she was going to be a powerhouse. And she's
stylish.
So stylish. She charmed the heck out of the crowd that night. Yeah.
Well, and I love the image of the pillbox hat and the suit and all of that and the gloves. And, oh my God. The gloves would have been really good for COVID style.
Wait, they existed before the Spanish flu, right? The style of the glove. Of course they did.
I think so. Okay. I think gloves had to do with just things were so dirty all the time. Everything was dirty, you know? And now, just in these past 2 months of like having to really clean and be aware of germs, I realize how not clean and germ aware I am in general. I know you are, but I'm not.
Yeah, I would not say I'm a germaphobe, but I would say I'm someone who is fastidious about cleaning, and now even more so. And it gets real meta. Like when I come in from coming outside, I'm like, okay, I need to wipe down the doorknob, and then I need to wipe down my keys, and I need to wipe down my debit card, and then I need to wipe down my phone. And then I'm like, but what do I wipe down? Like, where do I put those things after I've wiped them down? Are they now contaminated again? It's just like a constant running dialogue. Yeah.
Well, before we get too deep into our cleaning rabbit hole, I want to take a moment to thank Baltimore Magazine, a longtime sponsor of The Stoop. You can find them at baltimoremagazine.com or on the newsstand. And they have all sorts of cultural and arts events and also news information about COVID. And we want to thank Golden West on the Avenue in Hamden, a great sponsor of The Stoop podcast. They have a drive-up window or walk-up window, I should say. And great Southwestern vegetarian forward food. So when you get sick of cooking, I mean, who isn't yet? Over there.
Yeah, they're not sick of it.
This next story. So Shauna Potter is the lead singer of a band called War on Women, which is a feminist punk band. And actually, they were supposed to be on tour right now. Were things not what they are? They would be out rocking clubs all over the U.S., but they are stuck inside like all of us. But this story really gives you a sense of who Shauna Potter is and sort of what it means to be kind of punk and feminist, not just as a musician, but like in the world, like what that means to walk through the world like that. So take a listen.
I'm 12 years old, watching TV in my room. And I see this image of feral femininity come on the screen. And it wasn't until I saw musician Courtney Love play guitar in a music video with her band Hole that I even knew that girls could play guitar. So I begged my mom for a guitar for Christmas, obviously. I'd always loved music. My mom says I was dancing in my crib with MTV in the background. I was singing as soon as I could speak. But I very soon gave up school musicals in order to learn how to play guitar in my room by playing along to my favorite records. When I was 14, my mom and I moved to Nashville. And pretty soon, in the school hallway, this other ninth grader approached me and said, "I heard you play guitar. You want to start a band?" Yeah, I do. And soon we were writing songs and practicing in her giant house in the county. Her parents got us our first show at their church. And I remember her dad, like, insisting that we play a Beatles song. So none of it was punk at all in any way. But by making that artistic compromise, I was able to perform for people for the first time. And I've been hooked ever since. Soon after that, I met my next goal of playing at Lucy's Record Shop in downtown Nashville, where all the cool bands played. I made a ton of friends. I played as much as I could. I got to see touring bands. A lot of really great experiences. But what I didn't really realize when I started playing guitar is that the price to enter these spaces that I loved was often sexual discrimination and harassment. Comments about my body, my ability, a doubt that I had any knowledge at all about music whatsoever, or even the frustrating, "Oh, you're actually pretty good." Sometimes we'd get too much attention, right? People would say, "Oh my God, you're so great," because the bar for female musicians was so low, they couldn't imagine we were playing. Sometimes we wouldn't get a show because there was already a woman in a band playing that night. Or we'd only get to play with all girl bands, even though musically it didn't make any sense, because these male booking agents, to them, gender is a genre. So I wasn't always on stage, right? You love music, you go see shows. In the audience, I've been followed around. I've been stared at. I've been danced really close to. I've been touched without my permission. I've had friends had their drinks spiked, be sexually assaulted. I've had friends be called the N-word at a house show with supposedly very cool progressive people putting it on. I've had trans friends not even want to show up because they weren't really sure if they'd be accepted. And disabled friends not be able to go to a show because there's no ramps or special accommodations for them. So it's pretty frustrating that this world I love is often not very welcoming. So flash forward a bunch of years, and I'm in this band called Warren Women, and we're on tour. It's the first night of tour where we're opening for a punk band called Anti-Flag. And I'm sitting at a table before the show writing out a set list, and the sound engineer comes and sits next to me and says he's really distracted by my legs. They sure do look good. All I could do is kind of do that nervous laugh, you know? Even though my band is called War on Women, I feel like I should be able to speak up about this. But frankly, I didn't know what would happen. He has the power to make us sound terrible that night, right? We want to impress the headliner. And frankly, I didn't know if the headliner would have our back because it was the first time we were meeting them. Now, luckily, they did have our back. And when they found out what happened, they told the club it was totally inappropriate, that they needed to handle that employee, and the club did. And that's cool. But how am I supposed to know what bands and what venues are cool? It's you just don't know when you enter these spaces who you can count on or if you're going to be supported. So these spaces are, to me, supposed to be an escape from the real world. And they're often not. They sometimes exhibit the same exact bullshit that we have to deal with in the real world. The real world that's constantly trying to put us in our place, right? So this real world, let's say about 10 years ago, I was working and living in Catonsville, and I was working at a vintage guitar shop. And part of my job is I'd have to go on a bank run sometimes, and that meant having a very nice two-block walk to myself on the clock, right? But it wasn't so nice because every single time on the way to and from the bank, I had to pass by a Jiffy Lube. And I was yelled at or whistled at every single time I passed, or, hey, baby, nice ass, where you going? You got a boyfriend? Every single time. Eventually, you kind of lose it, you get fed up, and you say, who fucking said that? Say it to my face. And they just laughed. They didn't care. And I realized in that moment, I felt powerless. How was I supposed to convince these people that I was a person too? So I got tired of being fed up, and I started the Baltimore chapter of Hollaback, which is an organization with chapters all over the world that collects people's stories of harassment. And I have found empowerment ever since by teaching people how to respond to harassment, whether you're the victim or a bystander or a venue. I even wrote a book and published a book last year called Making Spaces Safer, a guide to giving harassment the boot wherever you work, play, and gather. And it's in the back table over there for sale. Because I wanted to give that feeling of empowerment to as many people as possible, right? I want artists and entertainers and workers and audience members alike to be able to help their fellow community members and to recognize the power they do already have and use it for good. So I'm only a very small part of this movement, but I feel like I have seen an increase in people using these strategies over the last few years, an increase in signs on the wall. And I think that's amazing. And I've really only gotten maybe one critique about my book. And of course, it was from someone on Twitter who just said it's not radical enough. And I kind of thought, well, that's kind of great, actually, isn't it? Because I don't think using active listening skills is that radical. I don't think calming someone down who's in distress by using grounding techniques is that radical. I don't think putting a sign on the wall that says no harassment tolerated or if someone's making you uncomfortable, please see the staff is that radical. And I don't think putting the safety and attendance of marginalized people over the folks harassing and causing harm should be considered radical. I'm actually about to go on tour again in a week and a half. I've raised enough money to give a copy of my book to every venue that we're playing, because when I was coming up, I wish every band I played with and every space I played had the tools, the strategies to support people that are harassed. With whatever hardship I might have gone through, I know people have had it worse, and I just don't think that any of that stuff should be a barrier to getting to do what you want in life. I think everyone should have the opportunity to rock without hate or harassment holding them back.
I love Shauna Potter. I think she's awesome. And her book about how to make safe spaces, how to make clubs safe for everyone, you can find that by Googling Shauna Potter or going to War on Women, the website, and check out that book.
All right. Well, so you have done it. You've listened to another episode of the Stoop podcast. We really appreciate you. We also appreciate, during these tough times, our longtime sponsor, The Wine Source, which is located at 3601 Elm Avenue in Hamden. They are helping many a Baltimorean get through these hard times. And they're doing so with grace and quality product. Yeah. And excellent price points.
Before we get out of here, we want to tell you that we are doing a show on May 20th on Facebook Live. So we'll be on the Stoop Facebook page, and it is going to be the Stoop Mayoral Show, virtual style. We'll have stories from all of the candidates running for mayor of Baltimore, plus musical guests Caleb Stein and Dizzy Spells, which is actually music and tap dancing. So we'll give you something visual to see there. So check out on May 20th at 7 p.m. Just come on over to the Stoop Facebook page and you can check out the Stoop virtual mayoral show.
Yep. And we would love it if you could leave us a review at Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can find out more about live shows when we have them again. We will have them again. We will. We just don't know when. And workshops, which we will have again. Just don't know when. At stoopstorytelling.com. And we want to thank our ever amazing producer,
Badass
Maureen
bitch.
Harvey. Badass bitch. Maureen Harvey. See you next week.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.